Hey gang, the podcast starts in a moment, but first, today's edition of Screen Talk Emmy Edition is presented by the HBO original series Curb Your Enthusiasm. Larry David returns to HBO to star as, well, Larry David, living the good life out in Los Angeles and stumbling through one faux pas after another. Emmy eligible for Outstanding Comedy Series and all other categories.
Welcome to Screen Talk Emmy Edition. We are in the middle of nominations period.
In the thick of it, feeling the excitement.
So here's Michael Schneider, our executive editor in charge of all things TV and at IndieWire, and I am the interloper from the film side, but a true TV fan. And we're going to look at the dramatic acting categories, and we're going to start with dramatic actor and or drama actor, as the case may be. And based on what the Gold Derby folks are saying, it looks like This Is Us is leading the pack all the way, with Sterling K. Brown, who won last year, and Milo Ventimiglia. Is that how you say his name?
Milo Ventimiglia, who, mm-hmm. Of course, this was his big year because of the infamous episode where we found out what happened to Jack. And, you know, RIP Jack Pearson and damn you, Crockpot, the infamous Super Bowl episode. So that's why Milo is trending extra high this year.
Can he take Sterling, though?
I doubt it.
There's something very special about Sterling K. Brown. You know, anyone who meets him, anyone who watches him, you know, there's a glow about him.
Decency. A decency. He's a real actor. I mean, everyone here is obviously a real actor, but there's something about his a detail to the craft.
Yeah.
He's very, like, you know, he's strong-willed, but also very emotional. He seems to really be embracing the recent success. And, you know, like you mentioned, he won last year. And so, you know, it would be interesting to see him do it again. He would be the first person since Bryan Cranston back in, you know, 08, 09, and 2010 to actually win back-to-back Best Actor Emmys. He was the only one to do that in a while. James Spader actually did it twice in the 2000s, once for The Practice, once for Boston Legal, back-to-back. But
to confess that there's a part of me that likes the idea that The Americans, which is so popular and has really surged in the last two seasons, if that Matthew Rhys couldn't just move to the front of the pack, out of, you know, as an alternative.
It would be nice. And by the way, this is his last chance, right?
Yep.
So if he doesn't get it this year, then that's it. And of course, a great way to say farewell to The Americans would be to give him something. But I do think it's tough to go up against Sterling K. Brown. I think you continue to give Sterling all the awards and no one's mad about it. So
it's true. That's true. And I wouldn't be either. So Freddie Highmore seems to be in contention for The Good Doctor. Is that even a remote possibility for a nomination?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, for a nomination. Good Doctor was the, you know, if This Is Us last year was the big broadcast surprise, this year it was The Good Doctor, which is one of the most watched shows on television and was a big hit for ABC. And Freddie Highmore is another actor who people really like. You know, of course, they remember him from Bates Motel. Grew up with him, but he's a very accomplished, smart actor who's also a producer. And I think, you know, that was a tough role to play an autistic doctor and to try to figure out how to show enough emotion, but not too much emotion in that character and to carry a show with that kind of weight on his shoulders. He did a great job. So he's definitely in contention for a nomination. Other names on the list include Liev Schreiber for Ray Donovan and, you know, Jason Bateman for Ozark.
Now, I don't see it.
That's, you know, obviously he was probably more likely up until a few weeks ago when the whole Arrested Development debacle tarnished Jason Bateman a little bit. You know,
he didn't come out of that smelling well, I have to say.
Not at all. Not at all.
He apologized afterwards, it's a little too little too late.
Still,
you know, they were trying to save the series. They were trying to be solid in support of their show, and I don't think they realized how they were coming off.
No. And ultimately, you know, the thing that everyone remembers from that is that they made Jessica Walter cry. And when it comes time to vote for someone, you can't stop thinking about that. And yeah, I think that opens the door for, you know, Kit Harington from Game of Thrones.
So Kit Harington has a chance now that Game of Thrones is back. Yep. And he had a really good season. Why wouldn't he be a favorite here?
Oh, I think he's a possibility, as is Jeffrey Wright from Westworld. Bernard
was really good this season. I have to say, it's all on him. He's like the biggest character on the whole show, and he's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. So
you know, playing this robot who isn't a robot, who's more than a robot. You know, I mean, he's extraordinary, I think.
Yeah, and I think Ed Harris could still be in the mix as well, just because he's had a lot to play with this season on that show.
True. Simmons is getting great reviews for Counterpart, which I have not sampled yet. Have you had a chance to look at it?
No, and I think that may be an issue with a lot of folks, right, is that they haven't had time to check it out. But he is J.K. Simmons, and people do love him.
He's playing two parts. He's playing, apparently doing an extraordinary acting job with that. And then there's Jonathan Groff, who I think is extraordinary in Mindhunter and just does more with what could be a sort of stiff figure FBI man than you would ever expect.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, Rami Malek is, you know, he won the Emmy in 2016, but Mr. Robot just isn't on the radar like it was in the beginning. So that's a tougher one to kind of look at.
Then I think we're kind of getting beyond the realm of the possible below this.
Yeah, yeah. No. And then after that, you've got some interesting names, but, you know, I can tell you a name that won't be on this list is James
Franco. I saw the same thing. Why is he on the list? He's not happening. All right, so if we go, well, which brings up the question, as long as we're talking about The Deuce, which, by the way, is a show I really admire, David Simon's show about the New York seedy side of Times Square back in the day in the 70s, which I think they did a great job with. And why is the fact that James Franco is tarnished, does that also rub off on Maggie Gyllenhaal, unfortunately for her? Because she's so good in it.
Yeah, that's a good question. It's hard to get into the mindset of the voters, but it doesn't help. So I think anytime something doesn't help, then it probably rubs off a little bit and hurts The Deuce overall, which you know, is unfortunate because, like you mentioned, David Simon, it's an interesting that show might still find some success in Below the Line because I think as we've talked about, they did a fantastic job of recreating Times Square in the 70s.
Yeah. All right. So back to drama actress then. At the top of the list, no surprise, Elizabeth Moss for The Handmaid's Tale, which is still playing out. I think they're up to episode 10 at this point.
Yeah, and obviously she won last year, so I think we'll probably have a repeat of both Sterling K. Brown and Elizabeth Moss, last year's winners, picking it up again this year. And again, that would be the first back-to-back win for an actress since Claire Danes did it back in 2012 and 2013.
Speaking of Claire Danes, according to this chart, even though she had an extraordinary season, she doesn't seem to be in the running at all, whereas Mandy Patinkin is more ahead of her in some ways.
In some ways, and that may just be down to, the competitive nature of those different races. But, we've talked about this quite a bit. You know, you and I still watch Homeland. We still love Homeland. But I think for a good chunk of people, they kind of
tuned it out.
They had a great run, but then they kind of moved on from it. It's too bad. They're missing out on a lot of good stuff, but they probably still think of Homeland as the show with Damian Lewis and more about
that
terrorism.
That was a long time ago.
That's when the show was at its height, and that's when that's when Damian Lewis won an Emmy and Claire Danes won an Emmy, and Homeland won an Emmy. 2012. That's Homeland won, Damian Lewis won, and Claire Danes won. That was the height of the show's success at the Emmys.
All right, so we're back on for this year looking at Best Actress, and I would have to say for drama, Claire Foy has to be the biggest competitor to Elizabeth Moss. And I would argue, with all the attention she got, all of the controversy about her pay grade and all of that with Matt Smith, and they made it good. They took care of her. But even so, I would think she would have some advantages this year.
Yeah, I'd say some. And it's interesting that, you know, it's really, you know, about female empowerment, just as The Handmaid's Tale is. So you do have, you know, the two front runners who both, you know, really, you know, send a strong signal about representation and female empowerment, you know, both in Hollywood and in society in general. So that is an interesting race there. But of course, don't count Kerry Russell out for the same reasons we weren't counting Matthew Rhys out. Final season, Kerry Russell hasn't won an Emmy yet and definitely deserves one. So this is her last chance. It would be lovely to see her stand up on stage and pick up some gold. So, you know, she's definitely in the mix.
And as I was saying about Westworld and Jeffrey Wright, this is a season where Evan Rachel Wood has totally come into her own, you know, as the pistol-packing robot rebel. She's really fantastic in this, and I would think she would have some. I always wondered, though, if the fact that she was a robot would be a limitation. On some level, maybe she's not as emotional as some of the other performers in this mix.
I think less so this season because she is scary.
She is.
Scary this season. That's powerful stuff. And you know, looking at some of these roles, I mean, these are great, great, powerful, strong female roles for all of these front runners. So this is a very exciting race this year.
And then there's Mandy Moore with the ever perpetually popular This Is Us. She seems lighter weight to me than these other women.
You know, not so much this year. I'd say, you know, the again, that Super Bowl episode where her character had to deal with the death of her husband, and that those scenes where she you know had to react and at first was sort of shell shocked. I mean that was some powerful stuff. Very, very strong performance by her. And again, it's, you know, for This Is Us, it was the season of her and Milo Ventimiglia, which is why you see the two of them sort of you know mostly leading the way this year. In terms of standings in these you know, races so far.
All right, then we see Laura Linney, who's a very, very respected actress for her performance in Ozark. Is she also weaker than she would have been otherwise?
Maybe, probably not. I think she's probably about where she should be. You know, there's a lot of great shows, a lot of great performances here. So if she's still in the running, so that's still good. There's Emilia Clarke from Game of Thrones. And then the sleeper hit of the year, Killing Eve, Sandra Oh.
Yes, which has only been picking up steam and buzz, and people are talking about it. And I guess this is the standard issue question with the Emmys, which is that the established shows, if they haven't become too old news, like Homeland, have an advantage over the brand new shows, which many people may not have discovered.
Yeah, no, exactly. So it's, you know, Killing Eve in many ways is sort of the new generation of, you know, Orphan Black was the little show that could for BBC America for a long time and finally led to Tatiana Maslany winning the Emmy in 2016. So, you know, there's a chance that Killing Eve could be the next sort of slow burn for BBC America that starts to get a lot of attention, a lot of critical acclaim, and, you know, could end up with some at least Emmy feels, even if it's still a long shot to actually win anything.
So I have to say that this list is looking very white at the moment. We have to go down to number 11 on at least the Gold Derby predicting chart here to get to Viola Davis and number 12 for Angela Bassett.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a good point. Viola Davis did win in 2015 for How to Get Away with Murder. That show is aging now, so it's not in contention. Angela Bassett for 9-1-1, you know, that's a procedural show. It's Ryan Murphy, but it's more procedural, which makes it a tougher case these days for Emmys to really pay attention to. But yeah, no, you're right. It is very white. You know, Sandra Oh, you know, also being an actress of color on this list. But
me that is an advantage for her at this moment in time. Hate to say it that way, but I have a funny feeling she could make it.
Sandra, that would be fantastic. You know, that would be, you know, and I think, again, that show is peaking at the right time. People are really talking about it. It just ended its run. It was a show that improved its rating every single week it was on the air. It was a nice surprise for BBC America. And I think, you know, people like Sandra Oh from her days on Grey's Anatomy, and to see her now lead a show was a whole new revelation for a lot of folks. So, yeah, that'd be fantastic.
All right. So now we're going to look at drama series and the predictions are going, needless to say, it's a race. It's a race between The Handmaid's Tale and Game of Thrones, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, those are the two. Now it's tough because those are obviously the two most recent winners. You know, Game of Thrones won it both in 2015 and 2016, but then took a season off, which allowed Handmaid's Tale to sneak back in. But for the first time ever, both of those shows are in the race at the same time. So it, you know, it could be either. The odds makers are giving the leading edge to Handmaid's Tale just because it's feels, you know, it's the most recent winner. It's a little more in the zeitgeist. It's a newer show. It's on right now as we speak. It feels, you know, again, as relevant as today's headlines.
If not a little too close for comfort. I mean, that would be my question. My question is, are the Emmy voters going to go with the escapist, spectacular adventure splendor of Game of Thrones, which is just, you know, delivered on such an extraordinarily cinematic, big budget scale? Or are they going to be a little depressed, a little somber, a little too disturbed by The Handmaid's Tale? That's a question, I think.
Yeah, and you know, there's also the question that we've talked about before, which is how many people are actually watching Handmaid's Tale versus how many will vote for it. And you know, I still believe there is a percentage of voters who will check that box because they know it's an important show. They want to reward it, but it's too hard for them to watch themselves. So, you know,
you're hearing some of that. You know, I'm hearing some of that. So, and then This Is Us is the heart tugger, the one that reaches into the emotions.
Yeah, and I think This Is Us, you know, that was one that probably had much more of a possibility of winning last year because we weren't sure where Handmaid's Tale was going to land. And there is that great story of This Is Us being the broadcast show that's cutting through, the one of the few these days. It'll definitely get a nomination again this year. You know, it's tough to see it winning versus Handmaid's Tale or Game of Thrones, but at least it will be a nominee, as will The Crown.
We've talked about this before. If it were me, I would have The Crown much higher up than this. I don't understand its relative. I mean, it's in the top five, but Stranger Things, by the way, from Netflix.
Yeah, yeah. I'd say The Crown feels about right. I mean, Handmaid's Tale, Game of Thrones, that's definite 1-2. And then, you know, you got to have the broader broadcast show somehow get in there. It's the one broadcast representation.
I don't know. Do people think that way? Is that really how they think?
I think there's still an older audience, an older Emmy voting body.
Mainstream, if you like.
May still gravitate a little more toward, the mainstream show. So Crown, you know, as sort of the fourth pick among odds makers, that feels about right to me. You know, Stranger Things still in the mix, interestingly. Westworld, the big question there.
I agree, because the word on the street on Westworld, I mean, I'm hanging in, I'm into it, I'm on board, but a lot of people are saying they can't make heads or tail of it, it's too confusing, it's too violent this season. They're really checking out.
I was just talking to someone yesterday about this who told me that she had just checked out. She finally like couldn't keep up with it and was stressed out about it and finally just cut the cord and feels okay with it, is at peace with letting go of Westworld.
Sometimes you have to read the recaps in order to know what the hell is going on. I'm not sure that's appropriate, really.
Well, you know what's funny is she told me that instead of watching the show, she's just going to keep up by reading the recaps.
This is what we resort to these days. And then there's the Americans, so it's the actors on the Americans who are in better shape than the show itself.
Well, I hope the show, I mean, again, last chance for it to get a nomination, to be in contention to win. So I would hope and I would assume that it'll be nominated. So fingers crossed on that. And then, of course, the show that's jumping up, getting all that steam, Killing Eve, that'll be a nice surprise if that makes it into the nomination tally as well. But it could.
And then there's Ozark, and then there's Mindhunter, which I'm a big fan of. I think Netflix has done a lot to promote it, for sure. I mean, I have to assume this is on people's minds. It's a popular show. Why would you say that it's, you know, at this moment in 10th place?
Because of all those shows we just mentioned. I mean, yeah, Mindhunter's fine, but is it, more popular than The Americans or Westworld or Stranger Things or The Crown or This Is Us? No. You gotta, you know, it's, you know, this is part of the problem with only having room for 7 shows at most in these series categories. They should expand them to 10. And even then, you'll have plenty of snubs. We talk about this every week, I feel like.
We do.
And that's part of it is you've got great shows that, you know, are far below just because they can't make it in there. The Good Fight, Homeland, 13 Reasons Why.
Billions.
So Billions, yeah.
Which is a popular show. I'm not saying it's a great show, but it's one that people like.
It's and it continues to grow in interest and buzz as well.
All right. Well, this is where we are. We will reconvene when we talk about the. We have one more week of predictions, and then we have an actual nominations.
Yeah, nominations are coming up Fast and Furious on July 12th. So, yeah, we'll take July 4th week off so we can all kind of rest and take a breather, maybe catch up on some shows. So we're nice and ready. What else is interesting you right now, Anne? What kind of headlines? We were just talking offline that
The Disney changes are pretty huge.
Yeah,
where we have the I think most people expected Pete Docter, who's been with Pixar from the very beginning and was involved in the original Toy Story as an animator, to be named to replace John Lasseter, who's now, of course, leaving under finally for real, leaving
right.
under a cloud of sexual harassment. And now it looks like he's going to run Pixar. And Jennifer Lee, this was a little more of a surprise, I thought, would be running alone, not with some guy at her side, the entire Disney animation section alongside Pixar, which is wonderful, I think.
Yeah, I mean, to some degree, it does feel like they'll be able to not miss a step. I mean, these are people who know this business and who, you know, did a ton under Lasseter. And
Frozen, of course, is Jennifer Lee's great claim to fame. But she's worked on a lot of other things like Wreck-It Ralph and Zootopia. And she's just a super valuable writer, creator, animator. And I think they're doing the right thing.
And by the way, I mean, talk about timing, obviously, choosing after that amazing weekend for Incredibles 2 open to announce this, obviously the time to announce something like this.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the great openings in a long time for an animated film. And they're back on top. So Pixar is never to be underestimated. And their brain trust, as they call it, is very deep, very, very rich. And I think they're going to do just fine. And what else is going on? Of course, I heard you and Joe Adalian going on about the changes occurring with AT&T and what's it called now? Warner Media? Is that the new name?
Yeah. Warner Media, one word, kind of like IndieWire with a capital in the middle. But the big question now of what happens, especially with the Disney versus Comcast in picking up those 21st Century Fox assets. And, you know, Comcast is making this huge all cash deal, an incredible deal to pick off, those assets. So we're waiting on Disney to find out, what their response is, what kind of counter offer can they make to stay in the hunt. And ultimately, What does Rupert do?
The other thing that's interesting is the speculation on Twitter that Rupert, who of course is the model for this other show that's been playing Succession, which is pretty entertaining, a kind of King Lear drama about a bunch of children who are fighting for control of their father's empire. What you have right now is the situation where you don't know exactly how Fox News and the Fox assets are going to relate to one another, especially right now with this border thing going on, with the families being separated and the politics that are heightened and explosive between the Democrats, the Republicans, and Trump and Sessions and all of this. And Fox News' coverage is upsetting so many people that people within the realm of Fox Productions and the Fox Network are rebelling and fighting. Talk about this.
Yeah. I mean, I've wondered for a long time what it was going to take for the folks inside, 21st Century Fox to finally sort of rebel. You know, they've never liked being associated with Fox News, and obviously Fox News and the Fox Network and the Fox production units are completely separate, and operate under their own fiefdoms. But nonetheless, it's always been a bone of contention for folks who work inside Fox to have to put up with the fact that their corporate cousins are this, you know, propaganda state media machine, and they make fun of Fox News on The Simpsons and on Family Guy, et cetera. But it's still frustrating for them to be inside there and to see what this company is also doing. You know, last year I moderated a panel with the Simpsons producers, and half jokingly, half seriously, one of the panelists noted that, hey, you know, Matt Groening, what does it feel like knowing that it was because of the riches you made Fox that allowed them to basically invest in creating Fox News Channel in the first place?
Ay, ay, ay. What did he say?
He kind of laughed and said, you're right. You know, it's I think it does weigh a little bit on him in that, you know, it was, you know, ironically, the fortunes that Rupert made on the FBC, on the Fox Network, that allowed him to do that in the first place and created this monster that we're dealing with now. So you've got Steve Levitan, you've got Seth MacFarlane, you've got a few others who work inside Fox, now saying that they no longer want to be associated with a company that owns Fox News Channel, which I wish they had said that a couple years ago. It's going to matter less going forward once Comcast or Disney owns their production units
that leverage will be gone.
The leverage will be gone. So there's not much time for them to have that kind of leverage.
And the suggestion, and the suggestion is that Murdoch anticipated this, that he understood this and wanted to get away from it. And that helps to explain part of why he was willing to sell these assets in the first place, which did come as a surprise when he announced it. And in other words, we didn't all think that Fox was the weak studio, that we thought they were the strong studio.
Yeah. And, you know, I think he also, you know, he did see that there was no way that they were going to get any bigger. They weren't in acquisition mode. So he decided to cash out and, not that he needed more money, but, cash out and focus on some of these core assets, that are more his hobby anyway. You know, he's still, considers himself a newsman more than anything else.
Yeah, and the point that you were making with Joe was that finally, as these entities are all getting bigger in order to compete with Netflix and Amazon and so on, it's really Silicon Valley that is going to be in charge of what we consider to be Hollywood. It's really AT&T and Facebook and Apple and all of the big Silicon Valley companies.
Yeah, you can't compete against these companies that can just layer on debt that don't need to be profitable. Netflix isn't profitable, and it's not going to be for a long time. They keep spending more and more money, and you know, you can't do that when you're a Hollywood production company. You have to post a profit.
But they're going to give HBO, the new owners, are going to give them a lot more money to play with, right?
I suppose so, but, you know, not the kind of money that Netflix has.
Yeah, no. What's their budget? $8
billion? $8 billion a year.
Unbelievable. Well, thank you, Michael. We'll talk next week.
Sounds good. See you then.
Bye.
Bye.